D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Trevor Maddich, who is also brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. So, Trevor, the big talking point after the game on Sunday, Titans lose 20-12 to the Denver Broncos, was Brian Callahan, namely some of the decisions he made, and then him admitting after the game that he didn't quite know the rule about Elagaya Manor catching the ball, his elbow appearing to land inbounds. We took a lot of calls and texts about that. But I want your perspective as a player. As a player, would your faith be shaken in your head coach based on the decisions Brian Callahan made on Sunday?
Yes. Absolutely would. As a player, you know, and you know this, D-Mace, I mean, the difference between winning and losing an NFL game often comes down to just one or two or three plays, and that's it. So you go through all that effort, have all those plays that you just fight tooth and nail, and you're getting hit in the mouth, and you're hitting them in the mouth, and you're hurting, and you're fighting to make a difference on those one or two or three plays. And the if you look at your coaches and can say they're putting me in position that if I do my part, we're going to win, or at least we have a good chance to win. That's good. That's what you want. If you are a player and you look at your coaches and you think, you know, no matter how hard I play, I have to overcome not just the opponent, but some dumb decisions by my coaches, then you lose faith pretty quickly. And so Brian Callahan has a lot of making up to do, in my opinion. That's how I would feel. I haven't talked to anybody inside the locker room on the Titans, but that's how I would feel. And just, you talk about that Iowa Manor catch that was ruled out of bounds, and the Callahan did not throw the red flag to challenge it. And the thing is, afterwards, he said that he didn't, he explained why he didn't throw the challenge flag, and then realized that he was wrong on his interpretation of the rule and he should have thrown the challenge flag. In other words, even though Iowa Manor's elbow touched inbounds before he went out of bounds after he secured the ball, Coach Callahan said that he thought that he also had to have 1 foot down with that elbow in order for it to be a catch, and that's not the rule. The rule is you either have 2 feet or any body part except your hand. So if it's an elbow, a knee, a hip, that all equals 2 feet, even if your feet don't touch the ground at all, right? Well, the fact that he didn't know that means that he didn't throw that challenge flag, and then that was a critical moment in the play, and who knows, but that might not have led to a score that would have made a difference in the game. And the fact that he didn't know that is bad. The fact that he admitted publicly he didn't know that might be almost as bad. But also you have to look at it from a standpoint of the circumstance in the game. Because there's a coach in the booth that looks at those replays and then calls down to the sideline and says, yeah, throw the flag or don't throw the flag. And my understanding, based on what Coach Callahan said afterwards, was that he got a call from the booth that said, nah, it's not good. You're not going to win it. Just move on. Not worth challenging it. Well, if he got a call like that from the booth and said, it's not going to work, it's not a catch, don't challenge it, and he doesn't challenge it, you know, is he supposed to debate it with that guy? Is he supposed to argue with him? Well, wait a minute now. Tell me, Callahan should have known the rule, and he should have asked, why is it out of bounds, and et cetera. So that's all bad. But he also got a bad call from the booth, apparently. And that guy's job is to inform the coach what he ought to do. And if that call came down and said, coach, his elbow was down, it's a good catch, throw the flag, he would have thrown it. And so, you know, it was a complete failure of the entire system of whether or not to challenge. But ultimately, it's Coach Callahan as the head coach that has to know the rule. He didn't. He admitted he didn't. It's Coach Callahan that has to take the responsibility for the whole thing, which he did. But if I'm a player, I'm looking at that saying that's just one of several things in the game that my coach didn't give me a chance to win. And if you're out Iowa Manor, how do you feel about it, that you made a spectacular play against tight pressure coverage to get that elbow down, and you don't get credit for it. You know, it's, to me, it's just a debacle all the way around.
You're right, Trevor, and we've talked about that a lot. And I explained to the guys even today. I said, listen, he could have as easily as said after the game, hey, listen, I didn't think we were in. I didn't think he was in bounds. I didn't want to waste a challenge flag or potential of losing a timeout, so I chose not to challenge it. But to come out and players tend to buy that a little bit better than you coming out and saying you didn't know the rule. Players at least can buy, man, he should have challenged it. He didn't. That's the head coach. But, man, he should have challenged it. But now you're questioning whether he knows the rules or not. To me, that was right. The first mistake of it, him trying to be too transparent in the world of football. Haven't he found that out? Mm-hmm. You can't do that in football. You can't be too transparent. In life, yes. Football is a different world, okay? And Brian has opened himself up to even more criticism when he wants to be that transparent, because now not only are the people on the outside of the building looking at you sideways, but maybe, just maybe, some of those players, like you said, Trevor, some of those players in the locker room may be looking at you sideways now as well.
Yeah, and here's the problem is that it piles up. Mm-hmm. If it were just that one thing, okay, that's not good, but we all make mistakes, okay, let's move on. But then the clock management at the end of the first half. You guys have talked about that probably a lot in this show, but just for those who were not listening when you were talking about it, with less than a minute to go, the Titans are up 6-3. They're ahead 6-3. With less than a minute to go in the first half, but they're backed up on their own 7-yard line, first down. Denver has 2 timeouts left. So instead of running the ball, running out the clock, and going into halftime with the lead, Coach decides that's the time he's going to be aggressive. So he called 3 passes. One of them was just a standard incompletion. One of them was a busted assignment because they tried to throw a bubble screen out to the right. And all 3 receivers out there went to block. One of them was supposed to catch the ball, but none of them did. They were all looking at the guy they were trying to block. So the quarterback threw the ball into the ground. Clock stops. The next one was a sack right in front of the goal line. And so now they punt from their own end zone. Denver gets the ball and drives it down and has a beautiful touchdown pass right in the final seconds of the first half. So instead of them going into halftime up 6-3, they give up a touchdown. Then DK, of course, has a 71-yard or so kickoff return, and they're able to kick a field goal. So at least it was only a four-point debacle. But when you put all that stuff together, if you're the players, you're thinking, coach, we're on the road. We're backed up against our own end zone. It's loudest in the whole stadium there, right in that confined space in where the stadium used around. And we're in the back of our own end zone, for goodness sake. And we're backed up next to our own end zone. And the risk there against that kind of a pass rush and that kind of noise is that was the risk that the coach chose to take at that moment, up 6-3. And I thought the risk reward was just a terrible scenario for the Titans. And if I'm a player, I look at that and I'm just thinking, why in the world did my coach put us in this position mm-hmm. where those guys are hard enough to block anyway, coming with their hair on fire on the pass rush, and now we're in the noisy end of the stadium, backed up, and we're going to try now to drive it on down there to get a field goal or a touchdown? No.
Let's go to your wheelhouse, the offensive line. Dan Moore, Jr., how do you think he played? He had some – when I went back and I watched the film, he had quite a few minus plays. But I think as a whole, you would be better to explain how not only he did in particular, but how the offensive line. I think Jamie Cushenberry, I think he's still working himself back into it, even though he had a few minus plays. But I think he's working himself back into it. But more importantly, Dan Moore, how did you think he did?
Yeah, Dan Moore did not have his best day. I think Pro Football Focus charged him with 7 pressures against Nick Benito, the Broncos pass rusher. One of the best in the league, but 7 pressures in a game to the same guy is kind of tough. Benito had 9 pressures total for the game. You talked about Cushenberry at center. You know, he didn't have any summer camp, really. He was coming back from his Achilles injury, and I really didn't think he should have played in this game. I think they should have let Corey Levin play and wait another week or so, or two even maybe, to work him back in. He was in a tough situation. And when J.C. Latham got injured at right tackle, all of a sudden the right tackle position reverted back to the difficulties of the last several years. And so, you know, overall the offensive line didn't do well. That's part of the reason. But you go back to Dan Moore, and I'm watching him from a standpoint of technique. Now, it's okay to get beat by a great pass rusher on the road when you can't hear anything. That happens, right? But I'm watching his initial pass sets, because if you are facing a guy that's just better than you, and I faced people that were better than me all the time in the NFL, the one thing you control is to take a perfect pass set and then have your first punch be accurate with your hands inside. Now, after that, he's going to start to break you down. But if your pass set is perfect and your initial strike is inside, it will take him more time to break you down, and that's time the quarterback needs to throw the ball. But I noticed that with Moore. When he takes that first step, which he always does very well, his first initial lead step with his outside foot, he steps back and to the side, which he's supposed to. When he steps and then keeps his feet in proper perspective as he continues to step back to get to the angle of the pass rusher, he does really well. But he tends to revert to being a defensive back sometimes. He'll take that first step perfectly, and then instead of coming to balance with the second step and then kicking out again with the third step like you're supposed to do, he'll take a perfect first step, and then he'll start to backpedal like a defensive back. You never do that as an offensive lineman, ever, ever, ever. I mean, a gust of wind will blow you over onto your back if you do that. You're out of position now. And so you lose all your strength. And a lot of the times when Moore got beat, he took a great first step, and then he backpedaled. And then he's not able to have any power or any ability to react to side-to-side movement. And so, you know, that's something that you would think he'd be able to correct. But he's been in the league for an awful long time, and he had the same problem at Pittsburgh. So he's going to have to do something to fix that, or else the elite pass rushers are going to continue to have their way with him.
Trevor Maddich is with us. Trevor, let's turn to a couple of key college games coming up this weekend. I want to start with Tennessee and Georgia. Georgia's been sort of behind the scenes. They've had a couple of easy games. But one thing that's been talked about a lot is they have not really needed to throw the ball down the field effectively. The passing game's been more of an extension of the running game. And now you've got Tennessee, who's got some banged-up guys in the secondary. What do you think of that matchup?
You know, I think that if Georgia is struggling to push the ball down the field statistically, just because their first two opponents were Marshall, who lost all their good players to Southern Miss when their coach went to Southern Miss, and then Austin Peay, who, by the way, is a very good FCS team. But if Georgia was just trying to play everything close to the vest and not really open up the offense, because they have Tennessee, and then the game after that is Alabama. And so if that's what they were doing, okay. But we haven't learned enough about Georgia's quarterback, Gunnar Stockton, yet, because he is a good runner. He's a gamer and a scrapper. But can he throw the ball down the field and connect with his receivers? And can his receivers get down the field and finish those plays? That's another big question mark for Georgia right now, because we didn't see it in the first two games, and we don't know if that's because of competence or if it's because of conservative game planning. And so that's going to be important, for because Tennessee is going to throw that ball down the field. And quarterback Joey Aguilar has shown in the first two games that he can drop the ball to receivers in stride deep down the field. Even though they didn't play great opponents, it was still very accurate deep throwing by Aguilar. And so Georgia can't count on just pounding the ball and beating Tennessee. They've got to be able to have the big play here and there, and so far they haven't done it. So I'm very interested to see if Stockton can be that guy.
It's a fascinating quarterback matchup for sure. Give us a thought about Vanderbilt's matchup at South Carolina. Impressive performance by Vanderbilt. South Carolina also really hasn't gotten Sellers going yet, which is a little scary, I think, if you're Vanderbilt. Sellers played such a great game, and they mauled Vanderbilt last year. But Vanderbilt looks like it's bringing a little bit more to the table.
They are. Vanderbilt's better at pretty much every position this year than they were last year. They, you know, quarterback Diego Pavia is pulling all that together. You know, they're better at the line of scrimmage, whether it's because of new guys or experience. And they've got one of the best tight ends in the SEC. And so they've got the ability to do stuff. And the fact that they just stomped Virginia Tech on the road last week tells you a lot about them, because that was basically a pick'em game as handicapped by our friends in the desert. And Virginia Tech just ended up dominating that game when push came to shove. The thing about South Carolina is that we talk a lot about Lenore Sellers, their quarterback. And as an individual, he is phenomenal. He's about 240 pounds. He's so hard to bring down. He's like a big fullback that you're trying to tackle, whether it's in the pocket or whether he runs. He's got a cannon for an arm. He can throw it out of the building. He's all that. Everything that everybody says, it's not hype. He's that good. The question is, can the offensive line do their work when they're facing a good defense? Can their defensive line, they've got a couple guys that are really strong on the D-line, but they don't have a lot of depth on that side. So I think that Vanderbilt has a good chance to match up with South Carolina in the trenches better than they have been able to in many years. And I think Vanderbilt has a good chance to win this game. And again, part of the reason is, you look at the quarterback matchup, both quarterbacks know how to win. But I think Vanderbilt has a chance to do some things, especially now when you're talking about throwing the ball to a matchup advantage at tight end. So this is going to be a very interesting game for Vanderbilt. But if they can win this game, the next two are Georgia State and Utah State, and they might be undefeated going into Alabama. And so that could be a very interesting scenario.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He is brought to you every week by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, guys.
We will react to what Trevor Maddich had to say about the Tennessee Titans coming up next. You can join us as well at 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.